It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and today we're going to be hearing from parents.
Brittany, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
If there's one thing the pandemic has laid bare, it's how precarious the lives of most working parents really are.
If you could start with saying your name, where you live, just really your story, you know, really what you've been going through.
Sure. So, okay. My name is Brittany Powell, and me and my husband, Eric, we live in rural Vermont. And we have one child. Our son, Waylon, is almost two. I have a full-time job as a media marketing manager at an arts college here. And then I also work as a part-time adjunct professor of art at a local military college. And my husband works as a craftsman and a metal fabricator for a local build company. So in the beginning, our full-time daycare provider closed for several months, and my husband was also laid off. I was all of a sudden sort of working from home, which was a little challenging. My son was not even one yet. He was pretty needy for me while I was here, and I was trying to get work done in the house, and I was also breastfeeding. It definitely felt pretty hectic. We were also having to continue to pay for the childcare that we weren't using. So it became pretty challenging financially because, you know, childcare in Vermont is about half as much as our mortgage is. Our current situation, which has sort of stretched out 6+ months, has been that my son goes over to his grandparents 3 days a week. I have him at home 2 mornings a week, and then I start work around noon, and then I work into the evening. And then my husband comes home, you know, at noon from his job. He starts his job very early in the morning. And then he spends the afternoon with my son. And I think it's easy sometimes to consider that there are solutions to every problem. For some people, there are no real solutions. I mean, I interviewed a woman here in Vermont whose husband was military, who was deployed at the beginning of the pandemic, and she had a job as a nurse and her child care provider shut down and she had no choice, but she had to stop working. There was nobody to watch their kids. And if you have a job where you can't have your kid buzzing around while you plug away at a computer, you have to go to a job every day. It's like, what do you do? If you quit your job and then you can't pay your rent, how do you do that and not end up homeless?
The thing is, this isn't or shouldn't be news. Working parents, especially moms, have been doing the impossible for what seems like forever. But the pandemic made everything so much worse that now people are finally talking about and even moving toward real change. Something like a parenting revolution. Journalist Alyssa Quart has been documenting the lives of working mothers during the pandemic. She's the executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project and the author of Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America. And our producer, Shannon Henry Kleiber, also a working mom, got together with her to bring us the ideas and the voices of parents who are struggling today.
Alyssa, thanks so much for doing this today. I wanted to start with being real about everything that's going on in our lives today. And I was setting up for this recording and the dog was here and the kids were setting up their Zoom calls and next door they started painting the house. And I was just like, oh my God, there's so much going on. And I just think that the reality of working from home and being a parent, you can't separate them anymore.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, it's just a lot to try to have a professional life, to work full time. Both my husband and I probably work more than full time. And have our daughter doing every pickup, every drop-off, trying not to use public transportation, you know? So even things like that have become complicated.
So tell me how you decided to cover this right now. Were you thinking I'm seeing this in my own life and what are other people seeing and how can I get their stories out?
Absolutely. I was seeing this in my own life. I have a 9-year-old and everyone I knew has been having these kind of Rube Goldberg-like setups where they were working in the laundry room, one of my friends, working in a closet, having their kid have their virtual schooling near the bathroom mm-hmm. and having their little kid on their lap while they're doing phone meetings. And for women particularly, it was a real setback. It felt like a lot of the gains of the second and third wave of feminism and just women's labor rights were being turned back because it seemed to me, and the research bears this out, that women were bearing the brunt of this in households.
Yeah, you know, in some ways, it's such a universal problem. It's cutting across race and class and geography. But as you say, it's really striking feminism.
Yeah, and you can kind of see a lot of the conventions of feminism and women's independence that were kind of attained. Like, you can have a life without a man in it and raise kids. You can have a blended family. All these liberatory personal choices that women were able to make in addition to working outside the home were now being set back. It's like, no, if you're a single mom, you literally have no one to rely on. Or if you're a single woman without kids, you're potentially completely isolated right now. It's been very strange from a feminist perspective, setting it back to this 19th century moment when the beginning of the childcare system was created. It was a fragile system, and it was intended for the poorest, unfortunate women with no choice but to work and who are being punished in some senses, I felt, by a failed system in this country. And now it's happening again.
What are parents doing who are really stuck? And can we talk about them a little bit? Like the parents who both parents need to be out of the house for work, the daycare is closed and the school is virtual. And what are they doing?
Well, one of the people I reported on, she actually had her young adolescent son caring for her other two children who were 7 and 9. And I think you're seeing a lot of that. Someone was telling me about someone who works at their school, going up to the Bronx from deep Brooklyn, dropping off her kid with her mother, and then going back to school to teach in Brooklyn, and then going back up to the Bronx and picking up her kid, and then going back to Brooklyn. So that's yeah. You're seeing these like absurdist lengths that people are going to just get any affordable, accessible daycare that they find safe for their children.
Okay.
Yes.
Just go ahead and start when you're ready with your name.
Sounds great to me. So my name is Deja Reed. I currently am located in New Orleans, Louisiana. I have one son. He's 2 years old at the time right now. I am a single mother. My parents do help out as much as they can as well. But pretty much it's me. So it's been a long rodeo, right?
Yeah, that's a good description of rodeo.
So my son's daycare ended up closing before we were actually furloughed or sent home from my job. So I had to go a few weeks without pay. Eventually we did, ended up getting furloughed. But when they called me back to work, it was like a lot of schools that were shut down or, you know, you can't go in and tour them. You can't meet the teachers. You can't do this because of COVID and everything, which is like a, you know, that's a struggle because, you know, you want to be able to meet your kid's teacher. You know, you're giving your child to somebody. You're putting your child in somebody's hand and sort of just to not be able to meet everybody or even walk around the center to see anything. That was challenging. I did not find nowhere for him to go for a very long time because it's already challenging, right? Finding a daycare that you feel comfortable with leaving your child for 40 plus hours a week, right?
Right. What do you think needs to be different?
I honestly believe that childcare should be government funded. But if we put more energy in, right, and not just taking it as, oh, we're babysitting from 0 to 4, but it's like, no, we're understanding that that's truly the age where the children, you know, they learn the most. This is what's offset them for the rest of their life. So if we just took into account that 0 to 4 is really where we need to start, not in elementary, right? Not, you know, once they get to kindergarten, but truly starting that and putting most of our energy in 0 to 4, you know, I don't think we'll have as much issues once we get to elementary and middle and all these other things. You know, like, that's just my opinion, but I just truly believe that it would eliminate so many other issues that we have further down the line.
Wow. Tish, thank you so much for telling us your story. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's sounding good.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So much that comes from this pandemic, it pulls back these layers that we didn't realize were there, or we knew were there and we were ignoring. And we're seeing the brokenness of the childcare, the work, the housing, the inequity. It would be so easy to get depressed about it. But one thing I really like about your work, Alyssa, is you talk about solutions and you talk about, well, what can we do next?
Well, one of the things that interests me is what have other countries done? And everyone points to Scandinavia. But even in the Scandinavian instance, in Sweden, for instance, it was the 60s and 70s Swedish feminists that lobbied for the expansion of childcare. So there was a mass movement. It wasn't just, oh, those Scandinavians with their good moral sense and their sense of social democracy. It was women organized to put pressure. And one of the things I've always been startled about, especially since I had a child, is why are people not more organized and upset about this? Why isn't there a parents' lobby like there is for the elderly? Like, I was thinking of AARP. It had $1 million in total lobbying expenditures in 2019, and it's part of why we still have some degree of Social Security. This is part of why the amount of rights that the elderly have been kept in place. So we need that for parents.
Yeah, I love the idea of the parents' revolution. Are there ways people on the ground can create their own parents' revolution?
Well, I wrote some about this in my last book, and I'm writing a little bit about it in my new book, because I think a lot of them are kind of bespoke, things like co-parenting, where people like are living together in the same house, even though they're not biologically or romantically involved with each other. They're sharing daycare, pooling daycare. I mean, everyone's making fun of the pods now as this bougie tendency, but like, I do think there's something potentially communitarian about, I prefer to call them collaborative learning. That is one thing. I mean, the other thing is to organize and to send letters to fight for greater funds. I mean, the amount that's needed when I reported this was just startling. The same amount was being given to Delta Airlines as was being given to help out with daycare. And what we really need is something more like $9.6 billion a month to stabilize it. And longer term, we probably need, you know, I don't know, $337 billion. It's sort of treating daycare as part of the education system, really, which would totally change how we thought about parents and children and our national responsibility to ordinary people.
Hello, my name is Monica Scott. I have 3 kids, and I have 1 on the way.
Can you tell me Monica's story?
Yeah, so Monica, I was very moved by her story. I mean, she is a mom of 3 in Lakeland, Florida, which had a very high rate of COVID-19 infections. And it had gotten so bad that the 7 and 9-year-old were at home with their 14-year-old, and they were like not leaving the house sometimes. And it wasn't even a house, it was a motel.
It's been pretty tough for me during this pandemic because I have to worry about if my kids are safe going to school. Are they wearing their masks correctly like I'm teaching them at home? Are the teachers properly following protocol and making sure our kids are being safe?
It all started when the Boys and Girls Clubs of Polk County, which is county that Lakeland is in. With that once offered after-school care, they shut, right? So now she's leaving 7:30 in the morning for her job at McDonald's. She's paid $9.25 an hour, and then she goes to sort boxes for Amazon at the airport at 1:30 and then works till 10.
To be honest with you, it's not easy parenting on these low wages. Making $15 would definitely help. Proper childcare would also help us during these times of the pandemic. I worry about my kids all the time, you know, wanting them to be safe and everything. I'm constantly praying for them. I'm praying for all the kids.
Wow. And how is she handling it?
The thing that was kind of moving, and again, I didn't get into this, but she is an activist. She's part of the Fight for 15 campaign to give $15 an hour for people like Monica who work at McDonald's and so forth. And she said that was like the thing that made her happy. It was like the only, like one of the only things that gave her hope right now. You know, she's praying and hoping something good is going to happen was how she put it. And her life has been from struggle to struggle. And now it's just a new level. Like her kids, normally they'd go to that ice cream truck and that would be this big joy in their lives and they can't even go without being accompanied by their older son who's not able to do sports anymore because he has to take care of his siblings. His whole adolescence is being kind of deformed and warped. So, I just think this is just one little story, but there's just probably millions of people whose kids and whose lives look like this right now.
You do phrase it as an opportunity. I know there's some dark places too, but the opportunity and the necessity, I think, of doing something different right now is real.
I'm more hopeful in some ways than I was before the pandemic started, just because you're seeing on television, on CNN, people are talking about people's needs in a different kind of way because they've been forced to. And I think maybe one of the things is that people don't really politicize parenting in this country, right? They individualize it. And I think this is one of the obstacles. We need to, in some ways, de-individualize it and say every parent has the same problems. I think the inroads, even though he didn't win, of people like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren show that there is the desire amongst a large number of people in this country to have a different kind of relationship to the state, a social reframing, to have a more interdependent sense of what we do for families. So not every family is siloed in their own difficulty. I mean, I feel like that's part of what's been exposed by this whole pandemic.
Yeah. Well, we will keep talking about this, Alyssa. This is an incredible, interesting idea, and your insight and your research is really interesting. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much. Lovely talking to you.
Alyssa Quart, talking with Shannon Henry Kleiber. Quart is the executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project, and she's written 4 nonfiction books, including Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America.